Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG pod overflow, the Cinephobe cold opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
Said the OG pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Underdog Fantasy is the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, the fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. You can play Pick'em, pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower total in each stat for this week's games for a chance to win big. You can actually win up to 100 times your money in a single night. That's right. I didn't say 10. I didn't say 20. Up to 100 times your money. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick 'em entry. My favorite feature, you can make rivals picks. Pit 2 players against each other. Wembanyama versus Nikola Jokic. Tim Hardaway Jr. versus Norm Powell. Kawhi Leonard versus Steph Curry. Who knows? Maybe Grayson Allen versus Pat Connaughton. You get where I'm going with that. You can do it all with Underdog Fantasy. Make sure you sign up today with the promo code DING. That's D-I-N-G. And get your first deposit doubled up to $100, as well as an instant pick'em special. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the app store. And don't forget to register with our promo code DING, D-I-N-G, to get your first deposit doubled up to $100, as well as an instant pick'em special. Must be 18 or older and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play? Call 1-800-522-4700 or visit www.ncpgambling.org.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
r/ is a hilarious podcast where Dabney Bailey uses ridiculous voices and emotions to read aloud the week's craziest Reddit posts.
He reenacts various Reddit threads covering wild stories and secrets, petty revenge, relationships, and much more.
So if you're looking for a daily distraction and a laugh, check out r/ wherever you get your podcasts.
When you listen to Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, the comedy podcast, you get a belly full of laughs and a head full of real information. Our gallimaufry of expert guests answer questions on stuff adults need to know. I have mold in my dwelling. What do I do? What's gerrymandering? What happens chemically when I fall in love? How do I handle a parent-teacher conference? What are microbes? Listen to Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone. Solve problems, get laughs.
How are we feeling, guys?
Oh, man, fuck you.
You think May's the only one who could do a fucking revenge tour?
Oh, my God.
Think that's what's happening?
This is a weird walk down memory lane. Not the memories that I want to be revisiting, but memories nonetheless.
I legitimately contemplated turning it off and just having you guys take over. I think it was, I have a note somewhere in there. It was like 30 minutes in or something where I thought I kind of want to turn this off. It ruined my night last night, like completely ruined my night.
I wouldn't say it ruined my night. It just, okay, maybe it did ruin my night. No, it ruined my day. I don't know.
It was, well, so I had last night off, and so I was trying to figure out what I was going to do, and I kind of forgot what day it was. So I was like, oh, you know what? I'm going to go see Queen and Slim. Like, I want to go see Queen and Slim. Like, there's a 7:50 show. I'm going to go do that. That's how I'm going to spend my night. And then, like, I started kind of figuring out, all right, what do I have to do before I leave? And then it hit me. I was like, oh, I have to watch Good Luck Chuck. And then started, like, checking times and everything. And I was like, nope, this is the only movie I get to watch tonight. It's Good Luck Chuck. And it took some getting through it.
And whose fault was that?
Look, man.
Don't you hate when that happens?
We all need to, you know, take our own medicine sometimes. And I'm not proud of what happened, but I do think we set a new low bar.
Ooh, I don't know about that. I don't. You know what?
Really?
Spoiler alert. There were a couple of scenes where I actually legitimately laughed. I was like, wow, oh, that's kind of fun. Mr. Magoo still takes the cake, man.
You know the problem with Hollywood is? They make shit. Unbelievable, unremarkable shit.
So I was legitimately offended.
You were offended?
I was offended.
I didn't know you could get offended.
I was offended.
This did it.
I was absolutely offended.
They're fucking making shit up, I mean!
Inconsequential detail after inconsequential detail after inconsequential detail.
Bees don't lie.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I'm holding a mic in my hands and now I'm talking all over. Okay.
Cinefall, the podcast where we break down the movies you're afraid to admit you love, except maybe this week. I'm Zach Harper, joined by Amin Alhassan, Anthony Mays producing the show. This week on Cinephobe, a very special episode with the 2007 romantic comedy, Good Luck Chuck. Good Luck Chuck stars Dane Cook. Mays, do you remember what you texted us after I picked this movie?
I was just reminiscing on the Dane Cook zone and how there was a moment in time when he was the biggest thing in the world, it seemed like.
Yeah, you said he was only in 3 movies. That's not true.
Not even close.
There was a 3-movie run where he's like the star, is what I mean.
Okay. Because I was very confused, because I mean, we might have been on the radio together or something when we started to think about it and look it up. I was like, no, that's not true at all. He's in a bunch of movies. But you meant as a star.
Yeah, because he's in Waiting. And he's pretty good in Waiting. He's like the cook, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. He's the main cook.
And then his stand up career took off. And then it was Employee of the Month, Good Luck Chuck, and My Best Friend's Girl. And it was like bang, 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 Dane Cook movies.
Yeah. Was Employee of the Month the one where he's working like Costco?
Yeah. And he's trying to bang Jessica Simpson.
Yeah.
He loves him some Jessicas, I guess.
He loves him some Jessicas, man. There was a time on Bumble where I was only matching with Jessicas.
I thought it was going to take a very different turn there.
I was only matching with Jessicas, and there were like 4 I was talking to at one time trying to figure things out. And so there was like, I had like a vegan Jessica in my head. I had a Cuban Jessica.
You had them saved as such in your phone, didn't you?
100%.
Vegan Jessica, Cuban Jessica.
Jess. And then there was just Jess. And it was just like, it was the only way I could keep track. Because, I'm not that smart. So I get this, the Dane Cook Jessica thing.
This Charlie Logan guy right here, huh? Oh, man. So, I can't keep him straight.
So he was coming off of Employee of the Month in 2006 and would be in Mr. Brooks and Dan in Real Life in the same year as Good Luck Chuck, both significantly better movies. Also stars Jessica Alba, who was in The Fantastic Four, Rise of the Silver Surfer in the same year as Good Luck Chuck. And she was about to be in The Love Guru a year later.
Yeah, Jesus I was just about to ask, Jessica Alba, her career was never as big as it should have been. Terrible I wonder career. Why. I wonder why.
She's a really
is she?
Actress. Oh my God, man. Name something she's been good in.
She's so hot though, dude. She was one of my biggest crushes.
Sin City.
Sin City is a garbage movie.
What?
It's a garbage movie.
Oh, you just don't have love for cinema.
Calm down, Scorsese. This movie also stars Dan Fogler as the buddy. He was in School for Scoundrels in 2006 and would be in Balls of Fury in 2008. That's how
I know. I just call him Balls of Fury the whole time in my phone.
Tony Award-winning actor Dan Fogler.
Get the fuck out of here. Tony Award winning.
He broke out on Broadway, and then a year later, he's making Good Luck Chuck.
Wait a second. Are you trying to tell me that Balls of Fury is actually a classically trained actor?
Yes.
There's no way.
The boob-obsessed Dan Fogler in this movie.
Oh, my God. Good Luck Chuck, directed by Mark Helfrich.
All right, Zach, did you dig up the dirt on this guy?
I dug up a little bit of it.
The name sounds very familiar, but I surprised me here with some facts.
So it's the only movie he's ever directed.
Okay.
He's only directed that Good Luck Chuck, an episode of Prison Break, and an episode of Bones. So you've probably seen it before some TNT game.
Yeah, there you go.
He's done a lot of editing work.
Uh-huh. Maybe he should have worked on The Irishman.
He was an editor for Predator, for The Last Boy Scout, Rush Hour, Rush Hour 2, Rush Hour 3, both of the new Jumanji movies, and a cinephobe classic, Showgirls.
Really?
Showgirls editor.
No way.
Yeah.
Directed his only movie, Good Luck Chuck. Coincidence that there's a shitload of titties in this movie?
No. Not a coincidence at all.
Like, hey, should we have titties in this scene? Yes, let's leave it in. Let's see. I'll find something else to cut out.
And RIPD, Zach.
Oh, God.
That's still in the hopper, that one.
Nope. I will walk off this goddamn podcast. It is my least favorite movie of all time. I was angry with myself after I watched that movie. I legitimately hate that movie. It's the worst movie I've ever seen. This movie was written by Josh Stolberg, who has also written Sorority Row, Piranha 3D, and Piranha 3DD.
And this is my favorite part. I dove way too deep into this before I even started this movie. So it's based off a short story by Steve Glenn. And you click on Steve Glenn's name, and he has only ever written a short story for this movie and appeared in this movie. And he appears to be a sustainable architect in Los Angeles with a massive collection of Legos and Star Wars toys.
Well, we got to find him, I mean.
Sounds like my kind of guy.
Yeah.
Let me just say right now, this guy's giving me hope because I don't want to be a Hollywood writer or a script writer, or whatever, but I would love to write stories that get adapted in the movie. Someone else does the hard work of actually filling in the blanks from my stories and then allow me just to appear in the movie.
I'm starting to think that his short story was basically a man has sex with women who then fall in love with their soulmate immediately after. That was the whole story.
That's a pretty good story.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it's not a good movie.
It's a filling in the blanks part sometimes.
That's a tough one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like who to have directed or lead it or write it. Those are always tough decisions.
Yo, the worst part is someone at the studio is definitely like high-fiving. Guys, you'll never guess who I got to lead for this. Who? Dane fucking Cook. No way. Nuh-uh. He's the biggest star in the world. How did you swing that one? His agent owes me a favor.
I've seen his agent kill women before. I think he doesn't want me to tell.
His agent's like, Dane, we got your lead in another movie. How are you doing this? Trust me. The idiot at the studio thinks I owe him a favor.
Synopsis for Good Luck Chuck. In order to keep the women of his dreams from falling for another guy, Charlie Logan has to break the curse that has made him wildly popular with single women. Sleep with Charlie once, and the next man you meet will be your true love. Tagline, there's something about Jessica.
What?
Her name's not Jessica in the movie.
No!
We have extra taglines, though.
More. Give me more.
There's something funny about Dane.
Oh, nice. That's definitely a lie.
He has to break his curse before she breaks his heart. On September 21st, true love has never been so hard.
Oh, boy.
True love is a blessing and a curse. She's the blessing. He's cursed.
Oh, that's really witty.
On September 21st, someone's going down.
Yeah, that ties in a scene in the credits. I don't know if you guys saw that scene. I did.
Sometimes love blows. This one has a typo in it. There's something wild about Dan. Nice.
No, he's talking about Dan Fogler.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, there you go.
It is.
The one he wants is the one he can't touch.
What the fuck?
True love is a blessing and a curse. Get ready to get lucky. True love, so hard. $25 million budget. Gross $35 million in the U.S., $59.1 million worldwide.
What the fuck?
It's a hit, baby. Dane Cook.
This is the Dane Cook hive back in 2007. I mean, I know we're coming from two Americas, but trust me, that hive.
I remember. Awful.
Oh, yeah. You were living in Arizona then.
Yeah, no, I remember.
Yeah.
I was very well aware.
Before we jump to this movie. You can watch this movie. It's available on Netflix. Rotten Tomatoes score. It's our lowest scored movie so far. 5% from critics on 115 reviews. But the audience, 57% on over 318,000 ratings.
The Hive.
Really?
57%. Here are the positive reviews,
Okay.
Victoria Alexander of filmsinreview.com.
I remember her, I think.
Gross. Exactly what the target demographic wants and gets. This is from Willie Waffle of wafflemovies.com.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Waffle's not just his name, ladies and gentlemen.
He could also be on who he blogged for.
Yeah.
Normally, I start to get the dry heaves when I see Dane Cook on the big screen, but this movie makes him likable.
Oh, okay.
Paul Burns of Sydney Morning Herald. The movie goes out of its way to be offensive, even by today's standards. The interesting thing is that it does it in an otherwise charming romantic comedy that's actually funny.
What?
Here's my analysis of that review.
Someone spoken as someone who loved that movie, but was worried. His girlfriend was like, I know you didn't like that. And so he's got to write that disclaimer. So it's like, babe. I said the right thing.
Sometimes Australians have a weird sense of humor. That's my take on that. So here's the negative reviews. Hank Sarton of Time Out Chicago. We've never gotten the appeal of Cook, and this did nothing to explain it.
Hey, Hank, you was ahead of the curve.
Brooke Holgerson from Boston Phoenix. The only plausible scenario in this movie is the idea that a woman would be so annoyed by Dane Cook, she'd be willing to put a curse on him.
Wait, is it Boston or is it Phoenix?
It's a great question. I don't know. Mark Bourne of film.com. What isn't forgivable, though, is being boring. And Good Luck Chuck has all the engaging magnetism of an unflushed toilet.
There you go.
Chris Nashawati of Entertainment Weekly. Can we finally just admit that Dane Cook isn't funny?
Wow. Okay. So was this the beginning of the turning of the tide?
It must have been, right? This had to have been the turn.
Yeah.
Ken Hankey from Mountain Express. Legislation needs to be passed guaranteeing that any movie in which Dane Cook appears will find his character smacked in the face with a shovel and dumped into an open grave.
Okay. So it is the fall of Dane Cook.
Brian Orndorff.
Where's Dane Cook right now, by the way?
Probably the Hollywood Improv. I've seen him recently.
Really?
Well, within the last year.
Oh.
Yeah. Brian Orndorff of efilmcritic.com is our last review. To best summarize the violent tonal changes that plague Good Luck Chuck, imagine for a moment if Bachelor Party had a subplot concerning the events of 9/11.
Wait, no, come on, dude. Come on, bro. Come on. Now you're trying to show off to the other critics. Y'all had a bet about who could. First of all, I love Bachelor Party.
Bachelor Party's great.
Great movie. Did you know there was a Bachelor Party 2?
No. Not the same cast, right?
I think. Yo, he might have been in it. When you ask same cast, you're only asking about, like, is Tom Hanks in it?
Right.
He might have been in it.
No, he is. it's from 2008.
We don't have to dwell on it. We can just move on.
Yeah. All right. I picked this movie because I had some food poisoning this past weekend, and I saw it on Netflix, and I thought, God, I'm not miserable enough to watch this, and then thought, oh, it's on Netflix. I wonder what the Rotten Tomatoes – like, this is how out of my mind I was. I wasn't sure if this was going to be low enough on Rotten Tomatoes before I checked it to qualify for Cinephile.
Jesus Christ.
Because I really didn't remember. Like, I remember it existed.
That's true. I'm not going to give you a hard time because I knew it existed. I knew the general premise was man sleeps with woman.
Yeah.
Woman gets married immediately afterward, and then word gets out, and then ipso facto, whatever.
And I was sure that I had seen this before, but after watching it, I'm not certain I ever saw anything but the trailers.
Definitely never seen this movie.
Oh, I'd seen it. I'd for sure seen it.
Did you see it in the theaters?
No. This is probably like early pirating days where I would just watch a bunch of random shit.
Imagine that that's the one you get busted for pirating.
Go down for Dane. Dane needs his royalties.
Go down for Dane again.
It's another tagline in this movie.
All right, let's get into the movie. We open in 1985 at a birthday party. Kids playing Spin the Bottle. Charlie and his friend are going over the bases of sexual activity. I wrote the note. They got a fuck ugly kid to play Charlie.
Well, that was your first? Really? My very first note actually was, what do you do during the 7 minutes, like if you're not in the closet? Because 7 minutes just sounds like a long time.
Yeah, that is like, a long time.
I know they pass the time by going through very rudimentary kind of intimacy facts.
Right.
First base, second base, whatever. But 7 minutes, it just felt like, yo, and what do you do the next time someone goes in?
It's a lot of waiting around. Being at the DMV.
Then the next thing I said was the fat kid, young Stu. So this kid had a career. What happened? Remember, he was in Drill Bit Taylor. He was in another movie. Like, he was cast in a lot of these movies.
That's what we're calling a career.
Well, I mean,
he was in Drill Bit Taylor.
He was going to be those, like, if you saw the movie this summer, Good Boys. Did you guys watch that?
Yeah, I saw Good Boys.
Good Boys is a very funny movie. But he was like,
son of a bitch, this kid was in Nacho Libre.
Yeah, see? Like, he was in a lot of these movies were like that age group where we need a kid who's going to cuss. Like, well, he was the guy, right?
He's been on the Goldbergs, apparently.
He's on the Goldbergs.
He's on 148 episodes of the Goldbergs. Okay, that's where he is.
All right, never mind. He's doing all right. He's good.
He was on an episode of American Dad.
I'm happy. Well, no one knows that shit. Like, I mean, I watch that show all the time. Like, I can't. Like, I see all the time. Eddie K. Thomas is on this show. Really? Who was, by the way, the nerd from American Pie who slept with Stifler's mom. But I don't know what character he plays. Nobody knows what character anyone plays other than Seth MacFarlane. It's clearly Roger and Stan. But the other thing I said as this,
he was in Drill Bit Taylor. It's an amazing sentence.
Drill Bit Taylor could have been a good movie. They just didn't do it right. And that kid, I mean, I'm just saying,
he's still got a career, dude. He's doing it.
I know. He had the niche of the cursing kid in these adult movies.
He played Jack Black twice, so.
There you go.
Where else did he play young Jack
Black? He was young JB in Pick of Destiny here.
Oh, that's right.
Wow, so he's been working for a while then. Damn.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anyways, the other thing I said to myself is I'm looking at these kids play Spin the Bottle, and I'm just like, the first thing I thought when I started looking at them while they're waiting and they're having this conversation about blowjobs or whatever, I'm like, aren't they a little young? Like,
yeah. Well, how old are these kids here?
They're supposed to be 10.
Well, no. Well, we find out later they were 10.
Oh,
right. I thought it was just a casting issue. I didn't know it was actually in the story.
Well, they fucked up the casting because they made young Charlie tiny and young Stu huge, and then adult Stu is huge.
I'm going to guess a Mountain Dew made young Stu huge. Oh, we can't fat shame?
And then I thought that there was also too young for this girl to be this goth.
Well, yeah, that and too young for any of them to be talking about any of this or engaging, at least the 80s.
Yeah, I'm
like, maybe today's,
today's kids, who knows?
Today's kids are giving each other blowjobs at like fifth grade or whatever. But like at this time, like in the 80s, nah, there were no 10-year-olds playing spin the bottle, talking about first base, second base, all that stuff. And then the kicker on all of this is when they get in the closet, then I get super uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Where she's stripping and she's stripping him. And I'm like, what the fuck did we just land into? This is borderline child pornography. I'm like, what am I watching here? What if somebody walked in the room while I was watching this?
Yeah, you'd be in some real, you have a lot of questions coming your way.
And by the way, completely unnecessary, as we'll find out later.
Completely unnecessary.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah, no, it's look, is this another movie we have to apologize to Skip Woods for?
I'm just saying, man. Like,
is that our Mendoza line?
Skip Woods?
I don't know. I think it might have to be the Esther House line now.
That's fair.
I watched Basic Instinct last week. I texted you guys about that. I dipped my toes in the Esther House pool again, and he really is a gifted writer.
That pool is still full of cum.
Pool has not been cleaned.
Stu gets a girl in the closet, refuses to kiss him. I just put, he's real creepy and unsettling.
Oh my God, that whole scene is like, I'm going to tell people we did the nasty. I'm like,
yeah.
Fucking.
He's obsessed with boobs.
Obsessed with boobs, sure. Charlie lines up the perfect spin for the girl he wants to kiss, but it lands on the goth girl. All right, she's super aggressive, says she loves him. Her goth makeup's all over his face. She scratches him. She twists his nipples. He busts out of the closet. She hexes him.
She takes off.
Yeah, she has like a leather bra on or something at like 10. Like,
oh my gosh.
They had to shoot this in front of adults.
Right. And by the way, there was a parent who said, sure, honey, you can be in this movie and go ahead and knock yourself out, take your shirt off for these weirdos.
Like, even if that girl's 12 or 13 in real life and playing a titty, like, it's fucking disgusting.
Unnecessary. She didn't need to do that. That's my whole thing. Is like, she did, like, they could have communicated, oh, she's crazy in love with him, or she's a little off kilter or whatever, without, hey, but now we need you to bust open your shirt.
I've got a note later in this movie that I don't think there were a lot of women involved in the making of this movie.
Were there any like non-pedophiles involved in making this movie?
That's a great question.
My question.
Maybe we'll find out why Mark Helfrich didn't get another movie.
There you go.
To direct. All right. She hexes him to never be happy, rips some of his hair out, and I wrote the note that killed 4 minutes. So now we're in present day. Charlie is half naked with a girl on the beach. I wrote, this may just be a movie to get Dane Cook with half naked women the whole time. There's a bit on the beach about her giving a bad blowjob. She says, I love you. He says, that's nice. She says, I'm licking sand off your balls. And you say, that's nice. We find out he doesn't like throwing the L word around casually. She storms off. He has an erection. Unnecessary joke there.
I just felt like, okay, that's like your regular slapstick. Like, I didn't laugh, but I was just like, let them have their dick joke or whatever.
Why are they on the beach at this lake?
I don't know. By the way, I figured out midway through the movie, it's supposed to take place in Washington.
Yeah.
And it got me thinking, like, who the fuck writes a story that's a rom-com where it's like, we're going to be in Washington. Washington State, by the way, not Washington, D.C. Who does that?
Sleepless in Seattle.
Oh, I mean, like, that's different. That was in the movie title. Like, this movie could have happened anywhere.
Yeah, it really could have.
Sleep in Seattle doesn't have the same ring as Sleepless in, you know, Columbus or Sleepless.
Also, oddly sunny for a movie based strictly in Washington.
Well, we'll get to that in a second. So
yeah, that's fair. My next note, we're in for a long one, boys. That's what this felt like. So he's explaining out to his friend Stu that he couldn't say he loves her. Stu says to lie about anything.
From Balls of Fury is my note right there. Oh, it's my man from Balls of Fury.
There's a herpes joke. Stu mentioned that This girl named Katie was dating Chuck 6 months ago and now is marrying a doctor. Chuck says he's a doctor, and Stu corrects him that he's a dentist. This is basically just ripping off a Seinfeld joke about podiatrists. And then I wrote, Stu is a creepy plastic surgeon. He should be arrested daily.
He followed his childhood dreams of loving boobies.
I'm going to say right now, Stu, easily most likable character in this movie.
What?
Wow.
I have notes about every time he said something that made me laugh. The first line that I wrote of his, although, did not make me laugh. At this point, I was just like, oh, man, Balls of Fury, they got you too. Because he has one. And he asked him, hey, you going to go with who are you taking to Katie's wedding? And he said, well, you know, Carol's not going anymore. You want to go with me? And he says, do bridesmaids give head in the coat room? And I just said, wait, do they? I've been to a few weddings this year alone. Is that a thing? Am I just sheltered, or have I been to stuffy weddings, or do you guys know? Is that
have
a
you
thing?
Never hooked up at a wedding before?
Not with like a bridesmaid in a closet or whatever. No, you know what? I take that back. I never hooked up at a wedding.
Okay. I never like bridesmaid in a closet, but like, yeah, I've hooked up with someone at a wedding.
I've been noticing that it's a big misconception that weddings are full of single women. Most of the weddings that I go to are couples.
They're all couples. That's what I was going to say. I think
if you know people at earlier ages that get married, it is full of, not full of single people, but full of more apt people.
So in the last like 2 months, I went to Steve Martinez as a producer on The Jump, his wedding. Yeah. Everybody there was coupled up, either married or just a couple. And then I went to Dan Levitard's wedding. And everyone there was a couple except for me, Stu Gatz, and what's his name? And Marty Smith.
And you didn't hook up with Stu Gatz? Yeah,
no. Too many heaters.
Not a heady play.
Yeah, my question about the weddings was like, it seems to keep happening in these movies that we watch where exes go to their ex's wedding.
Yeah. Also, yeah, I don't understand that. I would never.
Like in Heartbreak Kid, it happened. It seems like you're just torturing yourself, like both instances.
What a terrible vehicle for a plot. I just don't see why that's necessary. We're introduced to Elia English. You may remember her from Semi-Pro or as Aunt Helen
Helen on the Jamie Foxx show. Thank you.
Yes. She hates Stu. I'm with her. I don't understand Stu's humor in all of this. We're now at Chuck's ex's wedding, and for some reason Chuck is there with Stu. The bride proposes a toast to Chuck, thanking him for being her lucky charm. My next note, Dane Cook has a real big face.
He does.
I didn't understand why there was so much karaoke at this wedding. There's an old Asian man singing I Touch Myself.
I don't want anybody else. When I think about you, I rub myself. I don't want anybody else. When I think about you, I touch myself.
Instead of a band, right? Like they had karaoke.
That's a real risk, Amin. To have a steady diet of people doing karaoke throughout an entire reception? And to have it... I mean, that's... Man, I'm all for penny pinching when you need to, but come on. You gotta have a DJ.
Or at least like an iPod shuffle or something.
Right. Dane Cook's face not bother anybody else? It's a like, lot of close-ups. He has a gigantic face. It's not just a big head thing. Like his face is big.
All right. I mean, okay. John Larroquette has a big face.
John Larroquette. Yeah, John Larroquette has a big face. He's a big, like, lower part of his face, though. I think all of Dane Cook's face is big. All right, Dane Cook has a real big face. Chuck has a reputation of being good luck charm for women, so the ladies at the wedding are interested in him. Jessica Alba walks through. We're introduced to her. She runs into a waiter. She gets to sit at Chuck's table. Her name is Cam. She went to college with the bride. I wrote there's zero chemistry between these two. We find out she runs a penguin habitat. She's very accident prone. She spills candle wax on his crotch.
That was my note. Oh man, I forgot that Jessica Alba's character is a klutz.
Yeah.
This is so awkward. The interaction between the two of them. The part where he sits down and the girl is like, oh, are you Charlie? And then she whispers to the next girl. I'm just like, this is like, they just didn't want to spend any time on this. And then I wrote, how is this affliction a bad thing again?
Well, it's a bad thing if you want to find love, I mean.
Well, this is my favorite part. So this is my next note. Well, go ahead. So she spills the hot wax on
him. So spills the hot wax. She throws water on it because it's burning him. She starts slapping and rubbing it with a napkin. Stu comes over and notes that it looks like cum on his pants.
I laughed out loud and I said, balls of fury is funny.
Son of a bitch.
Because he says, he gets in there, let me get in there. It looks like, ha-ha, it looks like cum. And he yells it so loud. I laughed, man. I thought that was funny.
Stu is very off-putting to the women around. And next thing we know, a bouquet toss hits a dove, falls into the arms of the beach girl.
All right. So the beach girl is making out with a dude. And that dude is the architect who wrote the short story.
That's the guy?
Oh, my God. He really
got that dude was old.
And the dove exploded like it got hit by Randy Johnson.
It did.
He really came up, huh?
That's coming up to you, huh?
Shitty small. He wrote a shitty small story, ends up starring in this movie, gets to make out with a fairly attractive young lady.
Sure. We've killed 14 and a half minutes in this movie. Now there are a bunch of attractive women at the dentist's office waiting to see him. Word has gotten out.
Thanks to an article on perfectmatch.com, and I pause it to read this quote. Women claim that he's a lucky charm because everyone he shakes the sheets with finds her soulmate in the next guy she dates.
Shakes the sheets. I like it.
They use it again later. It's an expression I've never heard, and they're acting like it's this commonplace.
I'll bend her over and show her the 50 states. You know what I'm saying?
Do you have the rest of it?
It's not very interesting. There's also a random fact about him going to a jazz club, so someone like stalked him. To a jazz club the week before, and it's like, we spotted him at a jazz club.
It says to see Delta Blues guitarist Josh Stolberg, who's the person who wrote the screenplay.
Oh, God. Wow, my man.
He's trying to get his dates out at the clubs.
Nice. Yo, but also, what dating site has like a blog? That, like,
That's the best part is it was a message. So it wasn't even like an article. It's like they messaged everyone on this website.
Right. I'm just imagining like this guy, Zach, is seen with his French bulldog in the car at Popeye's drive-thru waiting to try the spicy chicken sandwich.
So I guess this is my question, right? You have this trait of his that happened because he was hexed by a very underage child. 30 years ago or like what? Oh, 20, it'll be 20
years. Yeah.
20 years earlier. Why is it now when he's like 35, all of this is starting to happen? What happened?
He's just starting to notice it, I guess. Right?
But how is he noticing it all at once where he never noticed it before? Which is funny because I thought, man, they could have just easily not had the pedophilia scene. Just had like the first girl he dates in the movie. Be goth or something and then put the hex on him as a grown-ass woman because he won't say I love you and then it all would have made sense.
Would have made too much sense,
sure,
I think.
Yeah.
Without putting children in weird sexualized content.
There are 1,000 ways I would change this movie. Like 1,000.
I know one. Not make it. How about that?
Chuck visits Stu at his office. We see a woman with no shirt.
Pleasure.
Her name's Pleasure. This is just a reason for Dane to be with half-naked women.
Then it smash cuts to a street lamp with two big circles that look like black and white cookies. It's like, we're really doing smash cuts to things that look like boobs?
That's why we did Seattle.
I mean, he is an editor after all, right? Like, that's his passion.
Yeah, he knows what he's doing. He's walking with Stu. The beach girl is getting fitted for a wedding dress. She calls him a lucky charm. Chuck gets home. He's got a lot of voicemails from women and a guy named Bob. He listens to almost none of them for more than a second.
Wasn't there a Rick and Morty bit where they talk about answering machines only exist as expository devices in TV? Yes.
Hey, Jerry, it's Kiara. Listen, my boyfriend saw those texts you've been sending me and he got pretty pissed off. If he calls you, just ignore him.
This is Carmox. I have intercepted sexual communications between you and my new girlfriend, Kiara. I am coming to kill you now!
Yo, Jerry, it's the Big R. I killed that alien that was coming after you. Looking out for you, buddy. Hey, Jerry, it's Rick. Don't be mad. I f***ed your ex-girlfriend, Kiara.
Who are you talking to, Rick?
Doesn't matter. Hey, Jerry, this is Michael down at the Antique Phone Rentals. I'm going to go ahead and let you off the hook for the $70 late fee. You can go ahead and keep that answering machine. Nobody really uses those anymore except for exposition on TV shows anyways.
Because I was like, every time someone's like, they go, I'm like, it's 2007? You still have
no one had those then. There's no way.
First of all, nobody had home phones by then. Home phones were already going out. But let's just assume, even then, like in 96, we didn't have an answering machine. We had voicemail, like you called in and then you listened to your messages on the phone.
Right.
Nobody has like the machine with the tape and the,
No. I guess they became digital at one point where there wasn't the tape. But even then, no one had that. Not in 2007. All right, now we're at the penguin habitat. Jessica Alba's feeding penguins. Her brother is a pothead that works with her. He's also the dude. He's Josh from 30 Rock. I don't know if you guys ever watched 30 Rock.
Yeah.
Didn't watch it.
He's the less funny Jimmy Fallon, right?
I mean, you would love 30 Rock, I think.
Well, let me just say this about this guy. I don't smoke weed. I don't see anything wrong with it, but I do not partake myself. I was so offended by how many, like,
There are three things I'm beyond offended about in this movie. One is their portrayal of women and how they think about relationships.
We're coming to that. What I dubbed the most problematic scene ever.
Two is there is the brother and his pothead, stereotype. And three is the portrayal of fat people.
If you're keeping track at home, Zach was not beyond offended by apparently the child pornography that started. Good to know, Zach.
All right, he's wearing a Woody Harrelson shirt. She throws a fish at him. He catches it. He throws it back at her. She almost slides down into the water, and then a penguin knocks her into the water. She busts her mouth open on the ledge. She needs a dentist. Fate.
Ha ha, she's so clumsy.
Wouldn't that water be fucking freezing?
Of course, yeah. Like that whole habitat would have to be freezing. She's wearing a polo.
Shorts.
Yeah.
But even then, I thought, well, maybe she just kind of like thugged it out. But like once you fall in the water, there's no way you're like, it's like a swimming pool or a hot tub.
Chuck's on a date. The girl jumps on him as soon as they get into a convertible out in the street. Ooh. She just starts fucking him on the street.
Is it just me or does he drive Quagmire's car? That's my note. That is Quagmire's exact car. That red convertible from that year.
Yeah.
Like, that's Quagmire's car.
Yeah.
And why are you driving a convertible with the top down in the Pacific Northwest?
It's a great question. I mean, I wrote, no woman is this desperate to get married. She wants to take advantage of him. He gets interrupted by his emergency line. It's Jessica Alba. She needs help with her teeth.
This woman basically tries to convince him that he's a saint for helping all these women who've been screwed over their entire lives.
No woman is this desperate to get married. It's cartoonish in a non-fun way. It's just bad writing. That's what I'm offended by, the writing.
There you go.
It's just bad writing.
And not by the child pornography.
You throw that in there too. Fine. Yes, child pornography is terrible.
If you twist Zach's arm, you can also get him to be offended by the child pornography. Mainly it's the writing.
Gotcha. Jessica Alba's fake teeth are Bohemian Rhapsody-esque.
Yep.
It's really bad. 22 minutes down this movie. He fixed her teeth. We find out she's obsessed with penguins. We find out he goes to Guatemala every year to help villagers. She accidentally stabs him with some dental instruments. His acting is just terrible.
He didn't really need her to be clumsy. That's what the other thing I thought about.
You just needed the accident. Like, you could have had her one not accident. Be clumsy have the accident.
That was her character trait. It's just like Nomi in Showgirls. Her character trait was storming out. Jessica Alba's character trait is that she fucks shit up constantly. Into accidents.
Right.
Is it supposed to be cute? Like, she seems like, pardon my French, a retard.
Ooh.
Ooh, wait, that'll come up.
That one.
That'll come up again. Hold on. Very soon, by the way. I've got it in the notes. Go ahead.
All right. She won't go on a date with him. He won't accept payment for the dentistry. But, oh, guys, her car won't start. He's giving her a jump. She gets him electrocuted. Just no reason for this unfunny slapstick humor.
Do Priuses need a jump?
Oh, that's what I was thinking about. Yeah. Like, I don't think a Prius would work like that.
No.
She's so new at the time, so people didn't know shit.
Yeah, they didn't know you could say anything about Prius. Like, oh, this shit flies. They went, wow, flying car. She's locked herself out of the car. He takes her home to get a spare set of keys. I said, I don't understand this script. Was this a rough draft? We find out her brother calls her Murphy for Murphy's Law because everything goes wrong. She's broken 12 bones. Her thumb is grotesque.
Is that she a real thumb?
No, no, there's no way.
It's a fake thumb. Fox had a gross thumb. I don't remember the thumb being even a thing, by the way.
Miley Cyrus has toe thumbs.
Wow. So does Megan Fox. You know where that comes from, right?
The feet?
No, because they suck their thumb too much. Terrible. You want to criticize the writing on this.
That was way better than any fucking joke in this movie. Are you kidding me? All right. She ruins the convertible top trying to put on the heat. Then they get to her place and she doesn't have house keys because they were on the ring with the car keys. And so she just grabs a brick and breaks her door window so she can get inside her house and get the spare key.
That was a little odd.
She trips into the car. I wrote, this is a lot of Jessica Alba physical comedy.
Why?
It's a lot of it.
Why?
Maze, you're going to like my next note. We might owe Hot Rod an apology.
Oh, boy.
I'm serious.
Laughed at this movie more than I did at Hot Rod. Just
get the fuck out of here.
Well, what? I already have one hearty laugh from it looks like Come. You know, it reminded me of Rob Corddry in Heartbreak Kid at the wedding also.
There is not a fucking moment in this movie that reminds me of Rob Corddry. Rob Corddry is a comedic genius.
So is Balls of Fury.
Oh, get the fuck out of here.
I'm telling you. There are going to be more scenes where I'm going to point out and you're going to be like, oh yeah, that was kind of funny.
Well, it has yet to happen. He's pressuring her into dinner or drinks or something. She says she's not emotionally available. He says he's interested in something physical. She says, so I've heard. This plot might finally start moving. He said he was kidding. Her skirt gets caught in the car door. We see she has penguin underwear. I said, I think I remember that from the trailer. That's how this movie did $50 million.
How paper thin was her skirt, by the way? Did it caught in the door and just completely tear as opposed to just tug like normal people? Then the other thing I said was, as she's there in her underwear and he hands her the skirt and she wraps it very embarrassedly and tries to back her way into her car, he just sits there and stares at her like a creep.
Oh, yeah.
We'll get to it. There's a point in this movie where I call him, quote, this dude is a predator. But at that point, I'm still like, because they're trying to make him likable. He won't say that I love you to a girl, even though he doesn't really believe it. Right. By the way, I had the question, have you guys ever said I love you as a response to someone who said I love you when you really didn't mean it, just because you're trying to get something done at that point in time?
I don't think I have. I'm not ruling it out, though. But
How did you navigate? Like, oh, hot and heavy. Oh, Zach, I love you. What did you say? That's nice. What did you say?
I'm trying to think of a scenario that may have happened. I mean, I probably said some bullshit like, oh, you're amazing or something. Like something along those lines. Like, I don't remember specifics, but I don't think I've ever said I love you to make sure I can get laid.
How about you, Maze?
I tend to throw that word around more casually than most people, so I probably would have said it first in most of the time. So that never happened to me.
That's how you avoid being
a good predator. That's how you avoid being something that only Arnold Schwarzenegger can take down.
I like Predator 2, the original, not the sequel.
What a great line, man.
He goes home. Reba, his assistant, is waiting for him in his home. She knows about the charm and tells him about the perfect match ad or message or whatever the fuck that was. There's an edible underwear joke I will not repeat out of the respect for comedy.
No.
It's just fucking terrible writing. Yeah.
And she says no one's disproved it on urbanlegends.com, so it must be true. And I just wrote, internet was different in 2007.
Or is it? Because I feel like Jade would say it would approve.
Right. Yeah, no, Jade has other thoughts. Though if she had said Snopes.
Yeah.
Is that funny?
But then no one knew what Snopes was. I mean, remember, these movies aren't made for nerds on the internet. They're made for people who'd never go on the internet and think every website is just a very factual, straightforward description of what it is.
Not to brag, when this movie came out, TalkHoops.net was 2 months old.
Oh, there you go.
That's when the writing career started.
What do you do on TalkHoops.net?
A lot of just reviewing movies.
The other thing also here is to be clear. Oh no, I'm sorry. I was gonna make another Jade joke.
Let's have it. Let's do it.
Because you have to imagine Jade's voice. So this guy just, magically all the girls get married, huh? Crisis actor. <He's>, yeah. Who looks that happy on their wedding day?
All right. She says to close his eyes and imagine someone beautiful. This wins him over in the moment.
What a weird fucking twist.
Like, that he fucks his assistant?
Yes. You didn't think that was odd at all?
Of course I did. She's wearing edible underwear.
She's Aunt Helen from the Jamie Foxx show.
He banged some good luck into Aunt Helen. Of course I found that weird. Yes, I think the child pedophilia is terrible in this movie. I mean, I don't feel like I should have to say this.
I think you should.
Stu's trying to convince him to embrace it, uses the word trim.
Chuck's going to see trim like Tommy Lee, Colin Farrell, and Ellen DeGeneres.
Look, you and I are different, okay? Besides the fact that I'm not retarded, I don't want to take advantage.
Dude.
Yeah.
Was Martin Luther King Jr. taking advantage when he said that thing in that place? I don't think so. Was Gandhi taking advantage when he was doing his thing? No. And don't tell me that Gandhi didn't score some sweet-ass Native American trim.
Gandhi was Indian.
You don't have to be called that.
I called this the most problematic scene ever. And here's why. Number one.
This is the one.
Number one, as Stu is going through the word trim a million times, he says to Dane Cook, very matter-of-factly, and Dane Cook does not deny it, what is it all women want? They want to get married. So one, all women want to get married. Two, he says, I want to get married and have some crib midgets. That was
goodness.
Crib midgets. And I'm like, okay. And so then Dane Cook's response is not to like denounce any of that stuff. He says, what do you think this thing is? What do you think? I'm retarded or something? And I'm like, he said retarded. And then you get the Gandhi Native American Indian joke. And I'm like, but then the last thing is that two dudes went to a park to throw a frisbee.
That's the worst part of this?
Yeah, like how? Who does that?
Two grown men. A plastic surgeon and a dentist went to a park to throw a frisbee.
Wait a second.
Yeah, wait a second. It is a sunny day in Seattle. Maybe that's what they do. That's how they take advantage of it.
Dude, would you do that?
Fuck no. Kidding me?
Go out and score some trim. That's what I would do.
This is where I wrote, I'm contemplating turning this movie off and just letting you guys take over. And then I put Maze, maybe put in the Stew pitch to embrace it with Gandhi, just so people know how bad this is. And then my next note, I don't think a single woman was involved in the creation of this movie.
The old woman who gets hit in the head and then like confiscates the frisbee. That was very Irishman-like in the terms of like, why do we need that scene? We didn't need this.
Why do we need any fucking scene in this? But why do we need this movie?
That's a good point.
For this sex montage right here, that's why we need this movie.
And I wrote this, honestly, up until this point, other than the exposed breasts in two scenes, like the him and Carol on the beach and then pleasure in the office, I really thought, and I said, wait, is this movie rated PG-13 or rated R? Because they haven't cussed a whole lot.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you could probably get through this movie at PG-13 based on the topic matter.
Yeah, you could say common PG-13 movie.
Yeah. You can. Like, you have, like, a limited number, but yeah.
Yeah.
You could say fuck one time in a PG-13 movie. Did you know that?
I did know that.
Yeah. And then this montage comes, and I'm like, well, it's almost like the editor now director said, you ain't going to take my baby away.
No. And
this was the most – like, I would have actually watched this movie with my parents. I'm not saying that it was a good movie or something. Ooh, we should watch this. But if it were on, I would not have felt like up until this point, I don't feel awkward like my parents. Okay, right. So some tits or whatever, like a couple of shits here and there. This scene came on. And again, I was watching by myself like, Jesus Christ. Why?
If someone walks in and sees you watching this.
Oh, there's no way around it. It's like, why? Why would you do this?
It's just to get him with half naked women. It really is.
But like, it was so.
I think he was tired of trolling these colleges on these like comedy tours and just wanted to get some, you know, some good looking of age women.
Oh, the comedy tours at the colleges. is weren't of age or
a lot of 18, was a lot he, 18 was
he was doing all of them at UCLA and like other schools of notoriously the Georgia Tech.
Georgia Tech.
Georgia Tech, first of all, Georgia Tech has like a 5-to-1 dude to girl ratio.
Oh, okay.
And that one, by the way, I'm just telling you right now, man. It's look, they definitely got in there for their smarts.
Calm down, Charles Barkley.
Crazy white people sex has really become a recurring theme on this podcast. My two personal favorites were the wheelbarrow and then they're hanging from some steel beams. It's pretty intense. But all the character names for this montage, really, you know, not fleshed out characters here. Ceiling lover, red-haired lover, wheelbarrow lover, contortionist lover, George W. lover, who has George W. tattooed above her bush, holy lover, butch cop, kitchen counter lover, shower lover, and magazine lover.
Yeah, I don't do that with men. I thought that was just...
Yeah.
Again, unnecessary.
But again, women are so desperate to get married, I mean.
Yeah.
They're so desperate.
No matter who, no matter what.
So we have a sex montage. I wrote, I haven't laughed once in this movie. My next thing is he's just fucking every patient. Aren't there laws against this?
Yeah. Do they even have dental needs?
Women? Yeah. He's chugging Mountain Dew. I said, this is the most believable part of this movie. He's grown tired of the women not being into the sex during the montage. I said, now I don't remember if I've actually ever seen this movie. I may have only seen the previews enough time to trick my memory into thinking I saw the movie. Now we're at Aquaworld for the penguin habitat again. Still over an hour left in this movie. Her brother comes out without a shirt. Mentioned she's been talking about him. Chuck gets a strange girl to ask Cam why she won't go out with him.
This doesn't make sense at all. This whole scene doesn't make sense at all. Like, it really is confusing. Like, why would you – why have a little girl there? Why would this strange man whisper into a little girl's ear? Why would
Where's her parents?
Yeah, just repeat whatever the strange man said.
Yeah.
I thought he would phrase the question in the form of a kind of analogy. It's like, what happens when the mommy penguin doesn't want to go out with the daddy penguin or something like that? Nope. He just says, why won't you go out with Charlie?
Yeah.
Just straight lesbianism, yeah. Right for the jugular. She says no because she's emotionally unavailable, which, by the way, spoiler alert, at no point in the movie do they explain why she's emotionally unavailable. Or do they? And I just didn't pay attention.
She's just lying.
She's just lying, yeah.
Yeah, she just didn't want to go out with him, I guess.
Well, she's heard the rumors, and her shirtless stone brother comes up and blows her cover, says she's talking about him, and implies that she hasn't gotten laid in a long time.
Yeah, he compares her to a penguin at one point, and then she finally agrees to go to dinner with him because
he reminds her of penguins. And by the way, his penguin analogy is like, you remind me of penguins. How? Well, you look at them, they're kind of awkward and goofy, but then in the water, they're so beautiful. But wait a second, she's never been in the water or any other type of analogous different scenario where you've seen her now.
One time she was in the water, he wasn't there. He was on a date.
Yes, he was.
And there's also that story about the penguins searching all over the beach to find the perfect pebble to give to their mate. And I was like, this can't possibly be real.
Yeah, all of this was really, really just confusing. And that's when I wrote, this dude is a predator.
100%. Yeah. And it gets worse. We find out she wants to actually be with this guy, Howard Blaine, who's a penguin expert who wrote a book.
She's saving herself for like that was the other weird thing. She framed it as in like, that's the dude I'm going to marry. But I'm just like, someone you've never met. Oh, isn't that a red flag for anyone? Like, this girl is saving herself for someone she's never met who just happens to work in her field in the field that she works in.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, this whole movie is just people with nothing but red flags. All right, now they're on a date talking penguins. She wants to go to she goes to Antarctica to view them or some shit. I don't know. She's talking about mating rituals of penguins. They talk about the stone being placed at feet or some bullshit. I wrote, this will certainly come back to bite us. She walks into a pole.
And that's when he makes his move.
When he makes his move, right, which is hitting.
He's a predator. This dude is a predator. She's concussed and he gets on top of her, kisses her forehead, and then kisses her. And then they make some joke about how, maybe you aren't that good of a kisser after all. And then she chases him down the boardwalk. By the way, why is there a boardwalk in Seattle?
Yeah, is there a boardwalk in Seattle?
I don't know.
I've been to Seattle. I mean, there's Pike's Market, but think there's a boardwalk there.
He's a predator. Anyways.
We find it. Well, now we're back in Stu's office. He apparently bought Pam Anderson's breast implants at some point. Chuck calls Pam the one. I wrote Stu. I mean, I guess Amin's going to disagree with this. I wrote Stu is the least funny character I've ever witnessed.
No, I laughed when he's got Pam Anderson's implants. He's like, so you're just keeping this on the hopes that some dude will buy this? And like, some dude did buy them. And then he puts his face right next to it and he points him to it. This dude. And the way he said it and the look on his face, it made me laugh. I don't know why.
I mean, Balls of Fury is not that funny to where you can carry over.
It was pretty funny.
He then about three lines later drops the word fag.
He calls her Miss Penguin Pussy, and I just wrote Dan Fogler is a Tony Award winning actor.
That blows my mind. Classically trained Dan Fogler. Amazing. Chuck explains the car or the charm thing to Cam. She doesn't buy it, apparently. I said if I never watch his big face kiss again, I'll be perfectly happy. They're about to fuck and his emergency line is going off. He goes to the phone. It's Stu. Stu says the charm thing is real and he can't sleep with Cam if he wants to keep her.
No. He says you can't shake the sheets with Cam.
Right. Sorry. Yeah. That's the better line. Right.
By the way, I pointed out for someone as accident prone as she is, doesn't it seem like a very bad idea to have that many candles all over her apartment?
Well, so that's house? A great, so my next note. Well, Chuck leaves saying it's a dental emergency while she's in bed waiting for him. My next one, question. She's so clumsy. Isn't sex with her borderline dangerous?
Have you ever had sex with a clumsy girl before?
She was only clumsy after me. But no, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if I've been around clumsy girls before.
But again,
comically clumsy?
Given how clumsy she is with that many candles.
Oh, yeah.
It reminds me, there was a Family Guy episode where like a rocket flies in the air and Peter's like, don't worry, it'll probably land somewhere deserted. And the next scene is a dude sitting in a room with a bunch of dominoes like stacked up, and he's in a rocking chair with his hemophiliac child, and right behind like a cupboard full of fine china, and all of this basically very fragile stuff. And then like the rocket lands outside and he looks outside, he's like, like something landed outside or whatever. Like that was it. I was like, yo, you got this super clumsy woman who every time they get together, she maims him some way or another. There's a room full of candles, which by the way, I can't imagine trying to light that many candles a move. Am I just not like this cold, heartless,
unromantic? I mean, you're not going match on that, right? Like you're going that kind of gun type lighter that you use for a fireplace, that kind of extended lighter. Like that's what you're doing.
Zach, there were at least 50 candles in there.
Look, I'm not lighting all 50. That seems extreme because then you got to blow them all out
at some point, or have your house burned down.
That seems like the less good option.
Question for you guys, because he gets the call from Stu telling him the dental emergency, but it's not. He tells him, like, look, I did the math. Every girl you've ever gone out with is married now, even so-and-so. You got it. Like, you can't do this. If you do this, you'll lose her forever, blah, blah, blah. And so he, against his blue balls will, he decides to say, I got to go. It's a dental emergency. Sorry, I got to go. And it's out. And I wrote the note. I think a lot of my exes are in relationships, and I wondered about you guys. Are your exes in relationships?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if all of them are. One got married.
I know of one where literally we weren't really dating. We were just hooking up or whatever. But like I saw her last. I mean, then we are for the purposes of this movie, right? Like,
I guess we are. Oh, then no, like maybe half of them are.
So this girl I hooked up with like in like May of some year, right? And then didn't see her again for, you know, just things happened, just, you know, didn't hit her up. And then saw on like on a social media post where in August she's seeing this dude. I'm like, oh, okay, whatever. And then like September, she posts like a picture of a sonogram.
Wow.
That was the biggest scare of my life because I had to do the math. Because by September, I couldn't remember. Like, when that last year? Was it July? Was it not? And I started counting backwards. Like, oh, no.
Start counting weeks?
Yeah, no. Like, it was like, oh, there's no way. If it was mine, it should be showing crazy right now, right? And not a little bitty bit in the picture. But then, like, she's now married with the dude and they got a kid and everything. And I just thought, maybe it wasn't me. Oh. Well, no. I just thought, like, holy hell, was like, because I didn't get that vibe from her that she was ready for settling down and getting married and having a kid and stuff. But I was just thinking to myself, well, damn, like, was I like that close to being like, I don't know, entrapped?
I mean, probably, right?
That means like it could have been me, right? There I go, but for the grace of God, it could have been me, right?
Good luck, Amin.
Oh man, good lord.
They're going to put the hex to a test with this really obese woman laying out by a pool with a garbage bag full of donut
my
holes.
God.
And I wrote, really? This is writing.
Hold on.
This is it.
Hold on. This scene gave us the funniest line in the movie where Stu is describing her. And then he says, in addition to back acne, she has front acne and side acne. You didn't laugh at that?
No, absolutely not.
I don't know. I laughed at that. Like the idea of side acne just made me really laugh, man. It's the way he framed it. In addition to the back acne, she also has front acne and side acne. When he said side acne, I laughed.
I'm worried about Amin's love
Amin?
Of balls of
just,
fury.
Just Amin. I'm just worried about Amin at this point.
So he takes her out, and then while they're at dinner, she's, of course, because it's a very poorly written movie, she has to be eating the biggest possible.
Biggest like, possible lobster tail. And
so
and
many.
Not using
and being pencil, gross. Right. Being gross about it.
Like,
and
no,
stuff.
Like even the fattest of people, no one eats like this.
But tell me you didn't laugh when you saw him doing the shots. He's just doing the shots nonstop.
I laughed when she said, I'm going to fuck you till you die.
And then the look on it. I like this was like the one coherent for me, like,
are you
90
out
second
of your
two
mind?
Minute stretches. I actually laugh at the back acne. Wow. Side acne. I laugh when they cut to him and he's just downing shots in a way that no one is humanly possible of doing shots like that. And then they cut to sex and she's just on top of him and you just see his face peek out a little bit from underneath and just this look of morbid fear in his eyes. I actually laughed at those parts.
Wow.
And that's why I say I laughed at this more than I did at Hot Rod.
I have yet to laugh in this movie. I'll just tell you that.
You picked it, motherfucker. So. Just remember that.
They fuck. He scrubs. 40 minutes left of this movie. Cam is sad at the penguin habitat. Feels stupid for putting herself out there. Blah, blah, blah. He finally calls, says he's been sick, wants to talk on the phone or over Skype.
This is the worst fucking video chat ever. Do you think we could talk on the computer? And then he's pretending to be sick for 2 weeks while they talk on the phone.
Did they not use Skype as a name because Skype wasn't well known enough yet?
It's before Skype.
Is it?
No, 2007 was Skype was around, but it was brand.
Okay. All right. I guess so. Chuck's trying to get Stu to ask out the obese woman to see if they'll get married or see if the curse has been lifted. She's trying to have phone sex with Chuck. She sends him a pic in the bath. Stu says he went out with the obese woman, didn't propose. Chuck goes to Cam. They slam into each other. Real shoddy craftsmanship with the makeup of those walls in her house. They're just dents in the walls now.
Yeah, they destroy the whole place. Their love is so passionate. They knock over a huge bowl of chips that are just sitting there.
Yeah, they go into her room. There's penguin shit everywhere. Not actual shit, but penguin paraphernalia everywhere.
And then a camera, and then he ignores the penguin shit and just says, oh, camera in the bedroom, kinky.
And like, we're just not going to explain this camcorder pointed at the bed. And then I wrote, wait, does this make her a cam girl?
Oh, God.
Her name's Cam.
And so now again, you want to criticize this movie.
100%. 100%. All right. Now, this is how fat this woman is. News report that this obese woman's getting married.
I didn't think that was. Like, I like the idea of, like, how can we, like, communicate that she does get married?
Put it on the news.
Put on the news because, like, who would marry a fatty like that?
Right. All right. Chuck's worried, pissed that Stu lied. Stu admits the line about going out with her. I wrote, God, this guy's face is so big. He put way too much food on her bed, on Cam's bed. He makes her breakfast in bed. There's, like, I mean, this is just
a weird reaction. Yeah, by the way, also, when he tells Stu to go out with the fat girl, he's obviously, Stu's worried because what if she falls in love and they end up getting married as a result, like, because of this curse. So he says, if I marry her, Chuck, we're going to hunt you down and we're going to eat you. I laughed at that, too.
Jesus Christ. All right.
They would eat.
So now he's trying too hard. He's acting crazy.
He basically turns into Woody Allen right here.
Forgot about one of the most important lines during the whole, like, montage of they just talk on the phone. Does your phone receive pictures?
Oh, yeah. That's
2007.
Oh, well, in 2007, absolutely received pictures back then.
I was
then.
Getting pictures in 2002. Yeah. 2007, does your phone receive pictures?
It's good writing, I mean. You love it. You love the writing in this movie.
You kind of like some lines in here, yes.
All right. He starts freaking out about her possibly meeting that author. He sends an insane amount of flowers to her work. She's getting creeped out. There are heart balloons everywhere in her closet. A barbershop quartet comes in singing Crazy in Love. They bring in a giant present box. Chuck pops out in a penguin costume. He's decorated her car with an almost married sign. He's in her car. She's not happy. He's a full-blown stalker. She wants space. Stu's about to fuck a patient. He's lied saying he's Chuck. He basically moved Chuck's office sign over his. Chuck says he wants reconstructive surgery to trick Cam into dating him as the next guy she meets. Chuck decides he's going to propose at the Habitat. Cam walks in with some guy. Chuck freaks out on him, thinking it's the author. I don't know. He rushes into the Habitat. He falls in the water. Penguins start biting his dick.
Yeah, we also see a penguin eating its own shit, which has been referenced several times in this movie.
Why?
They made some joke about or some fact that they eat their own shit or something. It's just referenced. I don't know.
I don't remember that line.
Yeah, it's mentioned a couple of times.
It's a weird payoff. Then it's raining and he's all sad and his assistant comes by and then he realizes the origin of the curse because a homeless man drops a bottle and he has a hallucination of the goth girl.
I wrote the note, I've seen Dane Cook recently and he looks like the way Dave Chappelle bulked up, only if it was a bee sting allergy instead of bench presses.
Oh, wow.
He's also a plastic surgery addict.
Oh, is he? Oh, I didn't know that.
That would explain a lot of
his giant face.
Oh, we found out. Yeah, I found out his assistant meth guy. He connects the hex. He walks in on Stu fucking a grapefruit for some reason.
Yeah, Stu's always talking about masturbating into grapefruits. He microwaves them and he, like, drills a little hole in them. He's also got a scrub brush up his ass.
Well, is it a scrub brush or was it his hand? I thought he...
No, it was a scrub brush. There was like a... Yeah.
Yeah, so he tries to make some explanation about, well, I don't know.
Cam's tending to a sad penguin, talking about how not going to find another mate. Her brother says she should call Chuck. He uses her creepy penguin bedroom as an analogy for wanting to be around something you love. How old is this movie? Stu drives a Hummer. That's how old this movie is.
Is that a Hummer? I wasn't sure.
The H2, okay. Yeah. With the one that they made into a pickup truck. This is right before, like, the economy crashed. Yeah. At that point, people were still like, yeah, what's the big deal? I fucking drive a big car. And the economy crashed after that. People were like jumping to their deaths and stuff. And that's when the Hummer became bad.
The good old days. Chuck confronts, I think her name's Anisha, the goth girl. Her.
Very black name.
Yeah, it is. She's got a kid. He's trying to convince her to hear him out and break the curse. He shows her his dick. Now she'll consult him. She doesn't think the curse is real. Chuck decides to set up Cam and the author. Basically convinces him you need to, like, do what's right by Cam. So he decides to set up Cam and the author. They meet for lunch. They're both accident prone. I mean, oh my goodness.
It's adorable. So much they're common. So klutzy. Yeah. Ha ha.
They're working together at the Habitat. Chuck observes them. They're creepily. He's just hanging around. He's a predator. You mentioned it earlier. He's a predator. Chuck has hit rock bottom. Stu's getting married to a girl Chuck hooked up with in the montage who had a weird boob thing.
Three boobs.
She's Total Recall.
She wouldn't take her shirt off because she was saving herself for her babies. And then he's like, do you have babies? She's like, no.
Cam is leaving for Antarctica with the author. I wrote the note. It's Dane Cook's hair that is throwing off the look of his face, I've realized. It's like a Tomb Raider drawing of Laura Croft's chest. Very angular.
That's the most specific description I've ever heard in my life.
It finally clicked for me in that movie. And it was about that point. Chuck's going after her. This is 6 years post 9/11. He's just rocking up to an airport trying to get through. His car gets towed. He has to buy two first class tickets to two possible connecting flights.
He is a dentist, and I know what my dentist charges. And you know, he could definitely afford that shit. I don't feel bad for him.
$17,000 actually doesn't sound that bad for two last minute first class flights to Antarctica.
For real.
It's actually not that bad. It's kind of a good deal.
It's a great deal.
Yeah. We've got a metal detector gag going. He gets the first flight. She's not there.
To be fair, the TSA guy who doesn't have official TSA clothing, I don't know why they couldn't. I guess they ran that $25 million budget, couldn't take him that extra mile. But he does point out, have you never been to an airport before? Because he tries to walk in with a belt and loose change.
Yeah, and that guy is Robert Kelly, who is in Louis.
Yeah, he's a comedian. He was actually on Dane Cook's like TV show comedy tour that was on Comedy Central.
There you go.
Yeah, Robert Kelly. He's a legend, I guess. I don't know.
Not to be confused with the other Robert Kelly.
Different Robert Kelly, although different both kind of part legend. Of both
some legends are scary.
Pedophilia, I guess, in some way, loosely.
Hey, there you go.
Full circle. All right. I don't know that's a full circle we want to make, but...
Vicious circle. We're talking about Dane Cook.
No.
Another one. Wow, we're really doing it.
Now we're at the second flight. He confronts her. We get a speech about him being a stepping stone. He says he loves her. Oh, he finally admits to loving someone. She says she's coming back Wednesday. We find out the author is married. I said, my God, his face on close-ups. It looks like an infected potato with syphilis.
It does have – he does have like really poor skin.
Maybe I'm just picking on poor skin. I don't know.
Like it's definitely – it's got a little bit of Emperor in like Star Wars.
Yeah, well, he's got the same like skin going on as the strip club dude from Showgirls.
Yeah.
Yes, he does. The owner of the strip club.
Yeah, like the pockmarks or whatever it's called, right? All right, he gives her a ring box, but it's got a stone in it, like the penguins. She calls out to him. He comes back.
Didn't even notice that. Thought it was just a ring.
It's a full-on stone. Like, not shiny at all. I think it was a fucking mood ring? What did you think that was?
I thought it was just like the diamond just was hitting the light different.
Okay, yeah. Like, all right. The kiss. Now I feel bad for making fun of his face, but I got another note. I said... His canvas grocery tote bag face getting smushed in the process of this kiss is really bothering me. Anisha, the woman, takes the pin out of a voodoo doll of Chuck, so the curse was real.
Oh, I didn't see this part.
Yeah, she's got a goth shoebox in her closet for some reason, even though she claimed to have like no idea what he was talking about.
And it's a picture with his face from when he was a kid on the voodoo doll. And she takes a pin out of the heart. 1 year later, they're in Antarctica together. She slips. He catches her. They kiss. Like, it's got to be like 1 degree out there at best, right?
That's when I stopped paying attention. I remember looking up.
Their tongues are stuck together. That's the last attempt at a joke. I didn't laugh once.
No, that's not the last attempt of a joke.
Well, that's what I thought. That's what I thought in my notes. And then we have a credit clip. Amin, you want to take away the credit clips?
Sure.
Like,
So Stu and his... three-breasted love of his life have been asked to house sit, which didn't know people still did, asked to house sit for Dane Cook rather than just check the mail every couple of days and drive around and make sure nothing everything's all right. No, they asked him to house sit, right? So as one does when you house sit, they're sleeping in the master bedroom.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you go through their shit.
No, yeah. Sleeping in the master bedroom, to me, that's the first step of like, why aren't you not like sleeping in a guest room or on a couch out there? Or, like, if I ask one of you guys to watch my house, you're going to come sleep in my bed? How fucking weird is that? Why would you want to sleep in my bed, right? So they're in the bedroom, and he starts going through, rifling through. He's like, what are you doing? He's like, looking for homemade porn. Which, again, he wants to watch
his
video of his friend that he's known since he was 10 years old.
Yeah.
Right. So finds a tape, pops it in, and it is Jessica Alba videotaping Chuck in bed. She says, I want you to do it. He says, oh, okay. Just to be clear, I'm not into bestiality. And he grabs a stuffed penguin, and then he proceeds to mock eat it out and then eat its ass out. Yes, to a stuffed penguin. And she's getting off on it. Like, oh, well, like moaning and stuff. Yeah. And that's the end of the movie. Like, oh, like, who thought, guys, wait a second. I got a better idea how we end this. We didn't need it. We did not need a bestiality joke.
No.
On top of the child pornography, on top of the misogyny, on top of every other problem with this movie. And if people liked this, people thought this was funny.
57% from the audience. So a little bit of trivia. Dane Cook can be seen wearing a Super Club baseball cap while playing Frisbee in the park. That is the same Super Club as the fictional wholesale store that he worked at in Employee of the Month.
It wasn't Costco. I thought it was Costco the whole time.
Oh, so this is expanded Dane Cook universe.
Yep, 100%. Jennifer Love Hewitt was offered the role of Cam Wexler, but turned it down because of scheduling conflicts. The role then went to Jessica Alba. Jennifer Lopez was also considered for the role.
That just kind of shows you where Jessica Alba was at.
Yeah.
She's like the second option behind those two, which is not good.
Well, you know what? Now she's got a very successful business making environmentally safe products, and she's richer than all of them. Except for Jennifer Lopez, probably. So, there.
She's in all of them. You just made Jennifer Love Hewitt. The t-shirt that Chuck wears during his first date with Cam is the same shirt that Dane Cook wore when performing Vicious Circle.
Oh, come on. Change your clothes.
The original script was titled The Warm-Up Guy. And then, two other things. According to his driver's license, Charlie's date of birth is 9/11/1972.
Again, this is a choice that the filmmakers had 365 days a year. In 1972, which was an Olympic year, there were 366 days. They literally could have picked any one of those other days.
Yeah.
They went for 9/11.
This is the note that I wanted to read to Amin the most. This movie actually has the same plot as the 1962 Sudanese novel, The Wedding of Zine.
Oh, yeah.
Written by Tayyip Sully.
Tayyip Saleh. It's actually a very, very famous book. It was been translated into like 70 languages and stuff.
Okay. Yet the movie's credits never acknowledged the novel, so they just ripped that off too.
There you go. How about that?
There you go.
Which gives me the idea that maybe I can make the wedding of Zane. The wedding of Zane. By the way, it's like Zane from One Direction.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's about him.
No. It's not, because it was written a long time before he was born.
Okay.
Just because a review of Good Luck Chuck was not on TonyMedley.com, I had to go the extra step, and I searched for it. I searched Tony Medley Good Luck Chuck, and I found a review by Mark Medley from Canada.
Any relation?
Unsure of the relation, but it might be Tony Medley's Canadian cousin. And he wrote, "For someone with more than 2 million MySpace friends, Dane Cook sure has trouble drawing audiences to his movies. This must baffle producers and execs, as he's one of the most successful comics of his generation. His last CD went double platinum, and he was recently named one of Time's 100 most influential people. Still, his attempts at comedy, Employee of the Month, are ridiculed."
Is there anything older than referencing, one, how many MySpace followers he has, and two, his CD went platinum?
He really was the king of his generation.
There are no comedy CDs anymore, or even albums.
So let me people still put out comedy albums, but
comedy albums?
Digital. Yeah, it's all digital.
I guess they don't go platinum.
I don't know how you do that. I will say this. So a friend of mine, she kept trying to convince us that Dane Cook was super funny. Like, she loved Dane Cook back in the day. And so
was this Ethan?
No, was Ethan a Dane Cook person?
No, but Ethan thinks Amy Schumer is funny, and that's to me, that's Amy Schumer is the female Dane Cook.
That's probably that's pretty accurate.
Actually, isn't she the female Carlos Mencia, because she stole jokes too?
Oh, that's true. Well, Dane Cook might have stolen jokes, right? Didn't he? Wasn't that the Louis thing?
If Dane Cook stole jokes, like. Those jokes were stolen.
But I remember she was trying to convince us what a big deal he was, right? And like, we knew he was a big deal, like, or he was popular, but we just didn't care. And so she showed us this MySpace post of his when he hit, I want to say it was like 8 million followers or friends on MySpace, whatever it's called. And he wrote something about, wow, this is crazy. Think about this. A city the size of Houston follows me or is friends with me on MySpace. That I just remember that specific point of the post where he compared it to the size of the city of Houston.
That was her example of like, look how hilarious he is.
Yes. Needless to say, it did not work. Sorry, Maze, keep going.
Still, his attempts at comedy employee of the month are ridiculed, and his recent stab at suspense, Mr. Brooks, vanished from theaters. At this point, the highlight of his acting career has been a stint on Crank Yankers, a TV show featuring puppets making prank phone calls. With Good Luck Chuck, he has yet another opportunity to get his fans into theaters with the added enticement of Jessica Alba. At issue is whether Cook's status as the king of YouTube will translate to the romantic comedy genre. It doesn't. The film ultimately fails as a strange hybrid, a gross-out romantic comedy. It's a sometimes sweet love story built on screenwriter Josh Stolberg's script of boob and fart jokes and first-time director Mark Helfrich's lazy visual gags. Old lady hit by a frisbee, fat woman eats a lobster, girl walks into a post. Cook looks uncomfortable taking on the mantle of leading man. His delivery is stilted in quieter scenes with Alba, lacking the timing of his stand-up routines. He's brash in your face as a comedian, but here Cook must show some restraint. Alba's character arc revolves around repeatedly falling down or running into things, and Fogler, a Tony Award-winning actor, is reduced to cursing loudly and ogling women. Lonnie Ross, 30 Rock, is charming as Cam's stoner brother, but has little to do but act high. The movie was initially conceived as a PG-13 flick called The Warm-Up Guy, which explains a lot. No one here seems to have faith in Cook as a romantic lead, and the nudity and swearing is heaped on to mask his shortcomings. In Good Luck Chuck, Cook is shoehorned into a genre most of his fanbase likely go out of their way to avoid. He'll get another shot at big screen success later this year in Dan in Real Life, opposite Steve Carell.
Oh my God.
After that, he'll need all the luck he can get, and then its rating is an omega and a half.
My
favorite thing. I remember there was a girl I went to grad school with who thought Dan in Real Life looked like it was going to be a good movie. I said, what about that looks like it's going to be a good movie? I just sometimes I don't understand what people are thinking. It's like Queen and Slim, by the way. Oh, I shouldn't say this. It's supposed to uplift all black forms of culture and content out there.
Oh, boy.
But it looks like a bad movie to me. Like, I was like, this looks like everyone's so excited. And now the reviews are coming back. And everyone's like, yeah, the movie's kind of very average. I'm like, of course, it looks very average. What did it for me was the scene where, like, in the trailer where someone says, y'all are like a hero, it's a role model, so whatever. I'm like, oh, it's so corny. It's so corny. Like, come on.
There are two things about that. One, I would have taken a very average movie last night over this piece of shit. And two, you're kind of missing out on this is our chance to just show you that we're with you. I mean, that's why we're so excited to go see Queen and Slim.
No, there's a lot of black people there.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. Because I've mostly just seen like white people talking about like, oh my God, so powerful, so good. And I've heard reviews, right? I've heard reviews. I'm just like, I don't know if this is supposed to be the take. That it's so powerful and so great, because I've seen a lot of reviews where it's not so much. Let's get this bullshit over with. Phobophile, Amin, you seem to have enjoyed parts of this.
I don't know about you guys, but I really enjoyed Balls of Fury guy. A lot of his jokes, a lot of his lines, a lot of his facial expressions, I laughed at. And of course, I did. Like I said, I thought that 90-second span between the back knee joke and then him doing the shots at dinner and then him just looking terrified. So I thought that was actually made me laugh out loud, but overall this is a terrible movie. Didn't make a lot of sense. Terrible acting, terrible writing, terrible everything about it other than Balls of Fury. He gets a thumbs up. So this is going to be a phobe for me.
Maze? It's a phobe. This movie's fucking terrible. It's enjoyable in the sense that we have fun making fun of dumb shit, but
right. There's
nothing genuinely good in this movie, and it's hard to like Jessica Alba as much after an awful performance like that.
I still love her.
Phobe.
Amin, if you saw this on like a guide, like TV guide, or the channel guide, like on, you know, on a movie channel, so you know it hasn't been edited, right? Let's say it's on HBO or something like that.
Right.
Would you stop in to see what part of the movie it's on?
No, I probably never would have.
No, I'm saying now that you've seen it.
Oh,
just
now?
Because you like Dan Fogler.
Oh, no. No. I will never watch this movie again.
Okay.
So long as I live. No.
This is a big time phobe. This is, to me, this is the worst movie we've seen so far.
No. Magoo
I
did, was worse.
No. Magoo, I would watch Magoo 1,000 times before I watch this again.
No, I can, so let me put it this way. I could watch this again.
What?
Yeah, I could watch this again. I could not watch Magoo again. I could not watch Hot Rod again. I could not watch Jupiter Ascending again. I could watch this again.
I could watch all those movies. I would watch all three of those movies in a row again before I watched this. This was the least enjoyable experience I've had watching a movie. And I know I picked it. I know this. I brought this on myself, but I was so bored and offended. Thanks for subscribing to Cinephobe. I'm sorry if you watched this movie and listened along with us. If you've listened to this podcast before watching the movie, don't go watch that movie. We got the gist of it.
Yeah, unless you want to watch the montage.
Yeah, unless you want to watch the montage. And even then
why wouldn't you just watch porn?
You just watch porn, right? Just watch porn.
Because it wasn't anyone famous. We didn't see any famous boobs. Like Jessica Alba's boobs never get shown.
There you go, cut it there.
The fucking resignation in your voice.